Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Recording in progress.
Thank you, lady. If there's, I always say thank you just in case.
You should, because the robots are listening. You know that.
I say please and thank you to our Alexa all the time.
You need to, because she could turn on you and she could barbershop window you anytime she wants. That's a fact. Robots are taking over. That's how we're starting this podcast.
That's how we start it. Now arriving, as you've heard, on Cultaholic Island. He's a comedian, he's a commentator, he's a voice for hire, physiotherapist. He's a cat dad, he's a wrestling fan, and he's got a brand spanking new special out now, which we are going to get into the weeds on in a bit. Johnny LaQuasto, how you doing?
Hello, my friend. It's been a long time. I know we spoke a couple of years ago about doing this. It didn't end up happening, so I am I'm to the moon to be joining you, I should say, especially when there's a lovely birdcage right over your left shoulder.
Yeah, so this birdcage has followed me and my wife-to-be everywhere. It's something from her house, I believe. If we'd done this interview when we initially spoke, there would have been a portrait picture of what looked like some ruins that were next to it, which came from her previous house as well. And I just put it up and didn't think any more of it. And then we were chucking stuff out the one day, and she went, "Oh, you can get rid of that." I said, "But this looks like it was from a lovely holiday." And she went, no, that's just a picture frame that I bought. I don't know where that is."
Well,
it was just the picture that came with the frame. I just didn't question it. I thought, "Oh, it's from a lovely holiday or something." It's been there for years.
There are certain things you got to keep. If you have a bird cage, you don't get rid of a bird cage. That's just how it is.
The birds would be livid. How many of your cats have you seen today? How many of your five have you seen today?
Well, it's funny. The chair I'm sitting in right now, there's one cat that's quite pissed off. I had to pick her up and put her over on the bed because she was sprawled out. Actually, you know what? I even took a photo of it. It almost looked like she was ready to record. Like she was ready to go.
Oh, love her.
So I had to pick her up. There's another cat just over yonder. I'll give it about 4 feet in the top of a cat tree because she can look out the window and see the entire neighborhood, you know? And so the other two are somewhere else. I inherited all of them.
This kingdom is all yours. If we're sharing cat pictures, there's mine.
Yeah.
There's Pablo.
Is that a green, all black, green-eyed? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I want to share this story anyway because it's quite fun. So we went away the other week. And so a friend of mine looked in on the cat. And so he's got a spare key to get in so we can check on him. Sure. And he rang me like on our second night. And I said, "Everything all right?" He went, "Not really, no. You don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear that." And then he went, "Right, I don't know how to tell you this." I'm like, "Why?" "But as I was coming to my apartment, I dropped my key. I dropped your key down the grate and I can't get it." I was like, "Jesus, don't. A key's replaceable. We can figure that out." Never, ever, ever start a sentence with, "Everything's not okay. I don't know how to tell you this." Never, ever, ever start a sentence like that.
"I'm so sorry. I can't actually watch after your cat, but how's your trip?"
Oh my God, I was furious. Anyway, so congrats on the new special. We've got to talk about you, enough about me. Saudi Stepdad is the story of navigating dream jobs, dream family. People who have followed you for so long, Johnny, would have, you've these You've had comedy appearances that you've made and stand-up routines that have been about sort of the fumbles and the journey of being a single man. This feels so different because obviously, like, you've taken on an entire family of four-legged and two-legged people. Like,
yeah, there's still plenty of fumbles. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, as we hear. As we hear in Saudi Stepdads, there's plenty.
I'm a daily fumble. yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Life has completely done a 180. And like I was telling you before we started recording, I've never really asked to do any kind of podcast over the last couple of years. Because for me, it was just like, especially when the whole big day, release day happened, so many people got released that day. And we were in the height of the pandemic. The world didn't know what was happening. I'm like, well, I've still never even put a tweet out saying, hey, I'm available for bookings. Cause I mean, April 2020, there's no bookings. So for me, it was just like, plus you never know what's going to happen in the future. You know, there's been talks about, you know, going back, that kind of thing. So for me, it's what putting the special out. My wife actually convinced me to do it. She said, you have so much material just waiting. You're so different than you were when you put the last special out. You got to do this. So we kind of started planning it out. And you know, when I came up with the special, I was like, well, I got to talk about life. I got to have a bit in there about pro wrestling. I got to have a bit in there about MMA. And I got to tell the story about how I even got here, because the pandemic essentially led me to everything where I'm at now. And it's funny because, like, I know I'm not the only person. A lot of people, you know, when you're in that system, that is your life. You are married to that company. You're married to that job. And it was amazing. And I loved it. And all of a sudden, when it's just like taken away, just like it was a couple of weeks ago to certain people, you're like, oh God, what do I do now? I thought this was going to be the end game for the next 20 years. And you're like, uh-oh, it's not. And so the special kind of just dives into a little bit of that. And plus for me, I was married to my career for my adult life. And now I have this amazing family and I'm like doing my best to balance it all, you know, still chasing every dream possible, but also making sure that I could be the best dad and husband possible. And I drink a lot of coffee. Did I mention that? I'm doing a lot.
How many is that today? You showed me one just now. How many is that? What are we on?
This is number one. So it's one regular coffee and then a shot of espresso on top. And then I got some collagen in there, two types of collagen. I got some MCT oil, pumpkin flavored, and then I got some reishi mushroom in here. So I'm all hopped up.
Nice. You're ready to go, which is good because we're here to talk.
Hey, when Cultaholic comes calling, you better be ready.
until they cancel, then be ready again. And then cancel, then be ready again.
You were teasing me. Third time's a charm.
Edging you all the way, baby. We're going to talk about the special in a bit, but we've got to talk wrestling because I've set you the indomitable challenge of choosing three wrestling matches, Johnny, for you to watch while stranded metaphorically on a desert island. And I want to go one by one by one through them throughout the interview today. But what would you like your first one to be?
I mean, in theory, if you're going to take matches on a desert island, shouldn't they all be 60-minute Broadways? At least you're going to be entertained.
I mean, that's a good strategy, and you could go that way.
You could. For me, you said, hey, choose the matches that mean something to you. There's no judgment. There's no criticism. And so I'm going to hold you to it because my list is, you know, I could choose the most classic matches everyone talks about. But for me, I'm choosing the matches that, like, really stand out to me a lot for different reasons. So I will start off. I don't think anyone's ever chosen this. If I had to guess, I'm starting off with SummerSlam 91, the jailhouse match between Big Boss Man and the Mountie. I'll take your reaction. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't think that one's been chosen before. That's a hell of a choice, though. I mean, that's one of those matches where it isn't so much about the quality of the wrestling, but all the fun in the build-up and especially all the fun after that match.
I'm telling you, I sing the Mountie's praises forever because he's a great example of taking a gimmick that really shouldn't have worked. And he committed a zillion percent to it. And he made it work in every way possible. And just, I remember that. And that's one of my most memorable matches from childhood. I think because as a little kid, you're watching, you're like, he's really going to jail. And just the way, Number one, the finish was great. The finish kind of came out of nowhere. It was an Alabama slam, I think, was the finish. But then, you know, Boss Man and a couple other cops, they drag him out of the ring. They drag him to the back of the arena, drag him in the paddy wagon. But it doesn't stop there. Throughout the rest of SummerSlam, they keep checking back in at the local county jail. And he's screaming, I think one of my favorite, "You can't fingerprint me, I'm the Mountie." Like, just...
So like many good his memories. Finger, like, no, no. He just, oh, he plays it an absolute treat all the way through.
Yes. It was so committed and real and entertaining. Like, that could not have been better, really. And like you said, it was not a long match. The story building up was really fun. But to me, that's one of the matches that are vivid in my memory from being a little kid because I'd never seen anything like it. And what really sold it is when they kept checking back in at prison or at jail throughout the night and just to see how he was dealing with it. And he was in complete and utter misery. It was awesome.
You talk about this being a match that you watched as a kid. Tell us where you would have been when you watched it.
Oh, I was at home on a cheater box, as we called it, stealing pay-per-views with my parents.
Oh, nice. So would this have been... So these are the boxes that allowed you to have, you know, as we would call it over the UK, hooky pay-per-view. Was this a guy around the corner setting it up for you? Because it tends to be over here. If you've got one of these boxes in the UK, there's a bloke in the pub that could sort it out for you.
You know a guy.
I know a guy that could chip my PlayStation. Like, that was my upbringing.
So I was too young to remember how we got it. I just remember it was just there behind our TV. Like, it just magically appeared. I don't know if it was Santa or a fairy, but somehow it was just there. And it was really simple. It was just a wooden, a plastic brown box with a red switch and a black switch. And you would hit the black switch and it would unscramble everything. And I remember, like, my dad's way of trying to make sure I didn't use it too much when they were gone, he would say, he's like, "Hey, when we hit that switch, the police know, like, they get a notification about it. So when we're not home," you know, but we would get all the pay-per-views on the cheater box. That's what we called it. It was great.
But you can't tempt a kid, like you said, you can't tempt a kid with a big red button. That's just asking for trouble. Did you have any friends that were wrestling fans growing up?
Yeah. I mean, my oldest friend in life, we met when we were 4 years old. He lived two doors down. I went to my very first ever live event with him at the Allentown Fairgrounds. And all I remember is the main event was Junkyard Dog and Outlaw Ron Bass. And I didn't remember much else about it, but my buddy recently told me when I mentioned it to him, because I found the old flyer for it. He said, "Yeah, man, the main event only went like 2 minutes. I don't know what happened." So I don't know if one of the guys was hurt or something went wonky in the match, but I guess the main event only lasted a few minutes, but that was the main at an old house show at the Allentown Fairgrounds. So, like, definitely had some wrestling friends. My brother loved it growing up. My dad loved it growing up. So we would all watch together.
You've done so many things. It's like you chase so many dreams and you talk about it a lot in your special. And you're very open about it everywhere else. But let's go back to young Johnny in Allentown at the fairgrounds. Like, what was the dream when you were that age? Did you have something in mind yet?
I kid you not. And my parents can vouch for this. The first thing I said when I was 7 years old is I want to be a sports commentator, because I was watching WWF. I was watching Gorilla and Bobby behind me here. I was watching Harry Callis call the Phillies, and I was fascinated with these storytellers. I was fascinated with their voices. If you Google Harry Callis, listen to his voice. I mean, he just had that like cigar smoking seasoned voice. And then, you know, you have guys like Gorilla. Gorilla was just, he knew how to not only protect the baby face, but Gorilla just, he was so authentic and so sincere with everything he said. And then you have Bobby, who was the best at anything he did. They were just magic together. And there's a lot of amazing commentary combinations over the year, but I'm just lucky that I got to, and then of course, Jesse Ventura was along with Gorilla and then Macho Man, you know, things changed. But that was like the earliest thing I remember is just the storytelling. So when I was 7 years old, the first thing I said is, "I want to be a sports commentator." I didn't even know what that really meant. And so, you know,
I was intrigued to know, because when I was younger, I wanted to be a radio presenter. So I had a radio setup in my room with a karaoke microphone, and I'd record shows there. Did young Johnny LaQuasto have a similar thing, chasing that dream of being a sports commentator? Are there tapes somewhere of a young Johnny doing sports commentary?
I would just turn the volume down and I would try to call stuff. But my buddy and I thought we were going to be music stars when we were like 9 years old. So what we would do is we would take the cassette tape. And at this time, the cassette had a little button where you can record stuff on the cassette recorder. So we would take another cassette recorder. We would play instrumental songs from different bands and we would write our own lyrics. And we actually made two of our own albums that I wish he claims they're somewhere in his house or in his parents' house. And that's what we did. We messed around with trying to make our own music albums at like 10 years old. And we wrote parody songs because I loved Weird Al, because of course. And so a combination of doing that and then calling matches and stuff on silent is kind of how I spent a lot of my childhood.
I'm fascinated by this album. Like, did the band have a name?
Spike and Ike.
Spike and Ike, come on.
That's right, dude. Yeah. We had, I forget what the first album was called, but the second album we called Roadkill. And what we did was we went out into his front yard and he had an Alf. Remember Alf from Melmac? He had an Alf stuffed animal. And so he just threw Alf on the road and we just posed with it and we took a picture and the album was called Roadkill. Keep in mind, I was also about 160 pounds at this time. I was like a fat kid. So like just me next to Alf. I mean, it's a classic album cover, I think. It's up there with Nirvana, Nevermind, in my humble opinion.
You've talked about growing up as a fat kid as well in your comedy sets as well. You've been very open about that. And to see you now, you would never know that was the case. But when was the turning point in that? Was there a turning point?
Kind of high school, but then once I decided to be a physical therapist, I hit my like sophomore year in college and I'm like, well, if I'm going to be a PT giving people advice, I want to look like I should be giving advice. And then so I just flipped the switch into becoming like, you know, just kind of like a health nut. And now that I'm like, you know, we're all aging, I'm becoming like a big biohacking, I think, is my number one hobby. Like just biohacking. Coming up with, I just mentioned all the shit I threw in my coffee. A lot of people probably have no idea what any of that is, but I love it. So I'm always a big supplement guy. And so for me, that's kind of where it happened. Like early on in college is when I decided like, hey, you know, if I'm going to be a presenter or I'm going to be a physical therapist, I want to make sure that like I look the part, you know?
Actually, on the biohacking thing, I want to go back to that coffee because you did list off a lot of stuff there. You said collagen and my brain went, oh, for your implants. Because that's what you think when you hear it.
So you know,
Talk us. I noticed they look fabulous. Talk us through all the things you've got in your coffee and why.
Yeah.
If you're happy to give some free PT.
Yeah, of course. So collagen protein, it's essentially now. If you have to avoid dairy, you might want you don't want to use too much of it because it does come from cows, but collagen protein has been proven to be really good for your joints, for your skin, for your hair, for your nails. It's kind of like a fountain of youth in a way. And so it mixes in perfectly with coffee. And then MCT oil is actually pure coconut oil that's been shown to be really good for the brain. Also just good for the body as a whole. It's like the kind of good fat that you could burn throughout the day. And then reishi mushroom has been shown to be essentially like, they call it the all-around mushroom. It's just good for general health. So I buy straight up reishi powder. I throw it in the coffee. And those are the three things. Yeah.
Nice. We'll get into sort of where people go to get more advice from you on that in a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Let's do your second match. We started strong. It's the jailhouse match from SummerSlam. What's your second one going to be then, Johnny?
Second one, and this goes back to 2011. And this is such a good memory for me because I remember I had to go to, and I was already working in wrestling at the time back in 2011. And I was working for United Wrestling Network, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. And I went to like a friend's barbecue where he must've had 30 or 40 people over, him and his wife at the house. And I was like, it was on a Sunday. And I was like, here's the deal, man. I'm like, there's a pay-per-view I really need to see. He's like, well, if you want to buy it, I guess you could watch it at the house. I was like, okay. So I bought Money in the Bank. Spent the $50, $60, whatever it was. And at the beginning of it, I was pretty much by myself and people were just making snide remarks, laughing like, oh, you still watch wrestling? I'm like, yeah, I do. Shut up. You know, and I'm trying to enjoy it. By the time the main event hits and the story has been told between Cena and Punk, and truly people didn't really know what was going to happen. I'm not kidding when I say 80% of that barbecue were stuck to the television screen in the living room, totally sucked in, watching that main event, and it did not disappoint. It was truly incredible. So as a fan, as an adult fan, that's why I chose that match, because I vividly remember that. Like, everyone got on board, and I'm like, you see, that's why pro wrestling is the greatest form of live entertainment on the planet, you dummies.
Because people are happy to dismiss it, but the moment you put something on in the background, like, it's the same with so many people, that if it's the right story and the right people, you get them. And Punk and Cena's the right story, isn't it?
It was gorgeous. And of course, you know, there's the video packages all the way through that tell the story. All you need is that 4-minute video package before the match, and anyone who hasn't watched knows what's going down. And the story they told was incredible. Even when Punk left and waved goodbye and blew the kiss, none of us really knew what was going to happen. So that was the beauty of it.
And unlike any other one as well, I think the curtain gets pulled back way too often now, but this was at a point where it didn't. And to have CM Punk looking down the breaking the fourth wall and talking about storylines that didn't happen, talking about things would be better when Vince McMahon's dead, and it was groundbreaking stuff. And then to have that banger of a match as well, and still keep fans like you and I guessing, that's a special skill that CM Punk has, isn't it?
It's very difficult to do these days, and even in 2011 it was difficult to do, and that's why I think it really just resonates.
What led to you? So you're saying at this point you were with Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Was it Hollywood or from Florida?
It was Hollywood.
From Hollywood. So talk to us about how this gig came about, because we've talked about Johnny as wanting to be a sports announcer. So how did you get involved with them?
Well, basically around 2010, I was working, I was already doing on-camera hosting, and I was working on some kind of project, just started talking with the camera guy about wrestling. And little did I know, he was friends with David Marquez. And at the time, David Marquez was about to start weekly television for, it was NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood at the time. And so he met with myself and a good buddy of mine, Stu Stone, on the same day. And he basically said, he's like, hey, I got an opportunity for you. I need someone to do some backstage interviews, and would you like to do it? I was already in before he even asked me. And that's kind of how it started. Our very first taping was in Orange County, California in 2010. My first backstage interview ever was Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, who's become, you know, one of my best friends in professional wrestling. I think he's one of the reasons I got my job with WWE, because guys like him and Nigel spoke so strongly of me, and I'm grateful to both of them to this day. And so that's kind of how that became about. And then over the years, over the next 9 years, I did everything possible with a microphone, everything possible backstage for Championship Wrestling. It's turned into such an amazing product. And that's kind of, you know, it leads to my third match, but then it also led to my opportunity with WWE, I think.
Did the dream job with WWE, did that catch you by surprise?
Oh, yeah. Did not. You know, I was at the point where I said, you know what? I'm just going to be grateful that I'm working in professional wrestling. It's hard when you know what your talent level is, though, and you feel like people aren't noticing. Like, that was the hard part. But I said, I'm like, you know, there aren't many opportunities out there for a guy on the broadcasting side of things. I'm not living on the East Coast where everyone pays attention to. No one pays attention to the West Coast unless you're PWG for many, many years. That's pretty much just how it was. And so I kind of just said, hey, you know what? I'm working in wrestling. I'm going to be as good as I could possibly be. I'm going to make sure I'm undeniable. If an opportunity comes up, great. If not, what am I going to do? I'm going to be a professional at the end of the day. I'm not going to bother anybody. And that's so, yeah, the opportunity was very, very surprising.
I was chatting, you mentioned how Adam Pearce and Nigel McGuinness put in strong words for you as well. Once you enter that machine, I know that you had a really strong influence on Brennan, or Marseille, as many will know, because we were chatting the other night, and he was putting you over like Rover, sir. And the story that he told, and I would like you to tell it, because we haven't heard Marseille's story on the podcast feed yet. Because you're pretty much you're the guy that pretty much got him onto the Raw commentary team.
So that's the cool thing about when you end up having an experience working for WWE. The coolest stories, and trust me, Mansoor and Brennan have been talking about him on their Twitch, which is so entertaining and so funny, because they legitimately are best friends and they are both stars. They're so talented. There's nothing they can't do. I can't speak more highly of them as human beings and just friends, and also as talent. And so, yeah, the behind the scenes stuff always make the best stories. So when I was at the PC, I had nobody to call matches with. There were no other broadcasters there. But yet I had to figure out how to be a play-by-play broadcaster for this company because, you know, there are certain things that you're taught, and it did make me so much better as a broadcaster to where now I could, you know, feel like I can call anything. But at the time I had to ask wrestlers to join me. And I knew Brennan for about 5 years before I got there. So we were already friends. He was the first guy I went to. Cause I was like, it's weird walking up to, hey, you want to go call matches over in the, over in the VO booth? Cause they're busy. They're training. They're going to skull sessions. They got a lot going on. They don't want to just, a lot of them don't want to sit down and call matches just for fun. So he was the first guy to do it. Well, then he told Manny, Mansoor joined in, and then I became really close with, 3.0, 2.0, you know, Matt Menard and Cool Hand Ange. And so we all became really close. Well, Matt loves talking, as we know. So he started joining me a lot. And then throughout my time, I mean, I'm trying to think of everyone who joined me in commentary. There were times where there was a show that never really got seen by the public called PC Underground. And it was a really unique way of shooting wrestling. And our commentary team for that was me, Savvy Piscatelli, aka Tino Sabatelli, and Tegan Knox, because Tegan was still recovering from injury at the time. So like we had to call matches for a while together, and we did some stuff, and that was fun. And then there are other times where, like, you know, Raquel Gonzalez would jump in just for fun, or like, you know, Chelsea Green occasionally would call matches. And, you know, thank God she's finally getting her just due, because I'm sure if she heard me compliment her, she would just completely trash me, which I would expect nothing less. But like, she's incredible. And I'm so glad that finally the world is seeing her talent being showcased for how entertaining she truly is, because she has been for years. I mean, we had a lot of fun calling matches, and just, you know, we were doing at one point a weekly show, just kind of promoting the local Florida events. We got one episode in, and then the pandemic hit, and that was it. But like Chelsea was like a little part of that as well. So there, you know, so Brennan and I, we were just calling matches. Mansoor was calling matches. And just one day they decided to do a shakeup on the commentary teams, I guess. And, they were sending our matches that we would call to Connecticut and to whoever wanted to listen. Next thing I know, they threw Brennan on 205 Live. And then a couple of weeks later, he's like, hey, I'm doing Raw on Monday. And I was like, what are you doing on Raw? He's like, commentary. And I said, okay, we got to practice. And so we would just call as many matches as we could to kind of get him ready for it, because he didn't see it coming. But at the same time, what an opportunity. He got to do it for however many months it was. But it all stemmed from him and Mansoor saying yes and calling matches with me for the hell of it. And that's how Manny and I got to do one episode of 205 together as the most inexperienced team in WWE history, I believe.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
when we think of the PC, we think of people just going in to wrestle. So you don't think of people like yourself who were there. Well, no, I'm not here to wrestle. I'm here to learn to be a broadcaster. When you, the time that you were there, did the facilities for you to train change in any way? Or was it a case of you were just sort of left just to find your own voice?
Stuff got moved around. Initially, the VO booth or the commentary booth was in one part, and then they moved it to a separate section, like a different warehouse and stuff like that, where it was actually, it was even bigger. So it was a much better thing. Like actually on TV days for NXT for a good number of months, Beth Phoenix would always come in early, and then her and I would work on stuff together for NXT television before she went to do the broadcast. We would work on, you know, graphics. We would work on transitions, just like all the basic stuff that we all, you know, need help with. And so her and I would do that stuff together. And I mean, what a joy it is to work with her. I mean, I can't speak more highly of her as a human being. What you see on TV is 100% who she is, just an amazing person and pleasure to work with. And so like stuff got moved around a lot, but you just got to roll with the punches. Like for me, I've always been a first one in, last one to leave mentality. Like I tried to be a sponge. I soaked up everything I could at that job because I didn't take it for granted. I knew they could have hired a number of other people. And I was like, I'm going to make sure that I don't make anyone regret this. And I feel like I did that. Unfortunately, you know, when the pandemic hits, none of us saw that coming. So, you know, what can you do? But my year there, I'm incredibly proud of it. I think my work speaks for itself. And it also made me so much better, you know, being taught by guys like Tom Hannafin and Vic Joseph and Michael Cole. And then, you know, being next to Matt Raywalt. I mean, he's an incredible color commentator. So like you learn from those people. And if you actually let it sink in, it's going to make you so much better. Like to me, once I finished there, I was like, well, I mean, why can't I do other stuff? And that's what I've kind of transitioned to, because with WWE, it's about storytelling. Like, sure, I can call matches before I got there, but you learn storytelling and you learn what works. And I think that's one of the big things that's missing, especially on the independent scene, even sometimes on television, but especially on the independent scene, is promotions don't want to spend money on commentators. They just want to use local people and just throw them out there. And I'll be honest, I'm glad wrestlers are finally being vocal about it. If someone's calling a match of theirs and they're doing a horrible job, or they're getting themselves over or trying to, or they're just not paying attention, like I'm glad men and women who are in the ring, who are putting their bodies on the line, are calling this bullshit out, because it's not fair to them. The commentary needs to be taken seriously. Storytelling needs to be taken seriously. Like, yes, if it's a comedy match, sure, you could have some fun, but there's way too much of that I see on the internet. There's way too much people going for just the cheap reaction, the cheap pop on commentary. And so that's the number one thing with WWE. You learn storytelling. And that's my ultimate goal every single time. That's why any event I call, I reach out to the wrestlers ahead of time. Hey, anything you want to tell me that I can get over for you. I do that with MMA. I do that with boxing, because I want to tell the story. I want to tell your personal story. All right. I want to get people invested if they're watching. And I think a lot of that is really lacking, especially in professional wrestling today. I don't think commentary is taken serious enough. And honestly, it falls on the promotions. If you want your matches to sound good, you got to have good people calling it. That's my soapbox. I'm going
to
have a
soapbox. I'm with you. I'm with you on it, because it's true. You listen to it. There's a lot of great wrestling products that are ruined by the fact they've just it's a very last minute thought. Oh, we'll just put somebody on to talk over it. And it's like, well, no, spend the money on getting the talent as you would getting the talent for in-ring, spend that money on talent for commentary.
They won't do it, because, and obviously maddening. Commentary is not selling tickets. That's why. And I do understand that to a point.
But in a way though, because if you watch something on YouTube that has, you know, a great production value and a great story being told through the commentator, that will sell tickets.
And some companies do realize that, like the few I'm working for now, as far as wrestling goes, they realize that and they brought me in, and I do appreciate that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things where as a color commentator, yeah, you could be a character. Sure. Hopefully the color commentators is a wrestler, because that's, you know, given the expertise, and you could be a little outlandish, but the play-by-play guy, like, I don't know, call me a traditionalist. I don't think the play-by-play guy should be an outlandish character. You know what I mean? Like, When I see these guys give themselves a nickname or like they're wearing like flashy jackets to get attention on themselves, I'm like, bro, you're not the story here. Like, watch the match. Like, that's the story. And this is not anyone in particular. I'm just saying, like, you see it a lot. And I'm like, look, man, know your role. The play-by-play guy's job is to tell the story, be neutral, drive the traffic, kick to your partner, and tell the best story possible.
You were at the PC, and obviously you helped with Brennan to get him onto Raw, and you're working with people like Beth Phoenix and other people that were coming in. But all the while, you hadn't, I believe by that point, you hadn't made your first appearance on TV yet. You were working through the process there.
Yep.
What was some of the feedback that you were getting whilst you were watching people come in, work with you, and then go on to things? And where were you at headspace-wise with that going on?
That was the crazy thing, because like, you know, like I said, I can call matches before I got there, but learning the storytelling, understanding the structure of WWE matches, you know, whether it be the shine up front or then, you know, the cutoff and then getting into the heat. And you learn a lot about that even at the NXT live events, you know, watching people work through their matches there. And so, you know, I would call as many as I could. I would send them on to my superiors. I would get feedback essentially like, hey, you know, you got to protect the babyface better here. Or if you're going to commercial, you don't want to talk about the heel. You want to talk about the baby face. If they're in peril, you got to mention it. If they're in control, you got to mention it. Like little things like that, that you always want to keep in your brain because it works. Like I know a lot of wrestling fans might be listening to me saying, oh, whatever, man, that's only one way of doing it. Sure, but it's the most effective way of doing it. It's like Al Snow said recently, I don't want to be called old school because until there's a new school that's better, don't call me old school. That's kind of, you know, there's certain things that just work in professional wrestling. And that's just my opinion on it. So yeah, it would be feedback like that. As far as, you know, making sure that you get the go home call, always make sure you call every pin attempt. Every pin attempt could be the end of the match. So you don't want to be like, and a cover. No, you want to have a little energy behind it. And, you know, if your partner is talking, they need to know, hey, I'm going to call this pin attempt here. Just continue your sentence as if I didn't interrupt you. Like little things like that just add to the fluidity of the whole thing.
Your dream job came as the pandemic was hitting. It was an awful time, and you've talked very openly about it for a while. And I want to kind of look at this from your perspective. We talk about messaging and what you're sort of instilled in you to the stories to tell during that. What was some of the messaging that you were getting from WWE in terms of how you were framing the wrestling action whilst very clearly the world was shutting down? Was there sort of a protocol that you were given?
Basically, like the mindset was like we were all kind of clueless to what the world was going to deal with, you know, but we all looked at it this way, like, hey, we have a job to do. Let's try to put smiles on faces. I know that's an overused term, but it really is true. There's nothing better than when you're at a live event and you see little kids smiling, because it brings you back to childhood. Like, oh, there's a memory they're always going to have, you know? And that's what we tried to do. I remember, I forget exactly what I said on the first 205 after the pandemic hit when things shut down, but it was something to like, you know, in these very uncertain times, we're going to focus on what we do best. And that is bringing the action and, you know, entertaining you. And that's really what, that's true. Like, that's really what it was. You showed up, you did the best job possible with no audience, and you did what you could. But other than that, it was just every day you just had to wait and see, like, okay, is anything changing? No. Okay. We're going to work. Cool. Let's just do that. And so I'm grateful to be a part of that team during that time. Cause I thought as far as commentary, the thing that changed was it really had to be conversational because there was no noise from an audience. So when you're calling matches, you really got to be careful about when you ramp up. You don't want to ramp up too early in a match because then guess what? Where are you at? You're up here now. Uh-oh. So it really taught you how to be even more conversational when you're calling an empty arena everything, you know?
And now days before the pandemic, I love this story. Days before the pandemic, you and Gregory Helms just decided to drive to Niagara Falls.
We did.
Like, let's go on a road trip. What was the temperature backstage when all this was happening? Obviously, you and Gregory going off to Niagara Falls is just you guys. Were you aware that the world was shutting down at that point?
We had a feeling. It was March 6th. It was a Friday night. SmackDown was in Buffalo. And, you know, Shane and I go way back. We've been to the Middle East together for Armed Forces Entertainment. I'm grateful to have him as a friend. And he's one of the greatest ever. I mean, if his work more than speaks for itself. And you talk about a brilliant wrestling mind. Also, quite frankly, the funniest person you'll ever meet. I mean, he's truly brilliantly funny. So we were, you know, in the locker room, we were talking and I was like, hey, just in case, like, we can't do anything in a couple of days, you want to drive Niagara Falls after TV? He goes, okay. So we did. We drove up to Niagara Falls. And of course, I really didn't know where I was going. At one point, like, we crossed the border and I'm seeing nothing. It's just darkness. I know we're in Canada. And I know I'm supposed to be somewhere near the falls. My GPS is telling me that. But then the reception became so poor, the GPS stopped. And I remember, like, I'm starting to get nervous. And I remember Shane just looks at me and he just starts laughing. He goes, you don't know where the fuck we are, do you? I'm like, no, I don't. And just when I think we're not going to find anything, over the small little horizon there on the left-hand side, we start to see the falls. And we're like, yeah. So we drive over and there's nowhere to park. Keep in mind, this is, oh boy, 11 p.m. at night. So we just pulled over, I'm not kidding, right next to Niagara Falls and parked in the dirt. We got out in our suits. It was cold. It was windy. And we stood there for about 5 minutes. We checked it out and we're standing there just taking in the silence. And he turns to me, he goes, you want to get the fuck out of here? I'm like, yeah. And so we jumped back in the car. We drove back to the hotel. It was awesome.
And it would have probably been the last trip that you would have made for a while as things would transpire.
So grateful for that, man.
You took a phone call from WWE about 2 hours after you wrapped. And it was that phone call. At the risk of sound a bit glib, was it one you maybe saw coming?
No. No, not at all. I mean, I was, I just got done filming on camera intros for 205 Live because they decided the next month was going to be feature episodes where each episode featured a certain superstar. And so I wrote all the intros and I went in and filmed them with, you know, who's now a very good friend of mine, still with the company. And we filmed them and we found out at noon there was going to be something we had to watch on our phones or computers, whatever. So I went home that day because I was not scheduled to be at TV and watched the little 2 minute thing. Still thought nothing of it because it kind of went over my head a little bit. And I was like, all right, well, I don't know what that means exactly, but we'll see what happens. And about 5 minutes later, I tried to send an email. I couldn't send an email. Tried to log back in, couldn't do that. And then a couple minutes later, I got a phone call and that's when it hit me. I was like, oh, wait, this is about to happen. And got on the phone and sure enough, everything changed in a matter of moments, which happens, you know, it's almost like it literally is a little bit of PTSD every time there's these mass releases, like just a couple of weeks ago, you feel for everyone, you know, it's just it's not the easiest thing in the world to deal with, you know, especially when it's not performance based, you know, when the pandemic hit, that was crazy. Like there, what can you do, you know?
Because so many of your avenues all of a sudden closed. And they became cul-de-sacs and you couldn't go. And that sort of for the rest of the world, this was very much the case. But everybody has their own stories to tell. And for you, it was a real dark one that you apparently took 7 hours to grieve over. And then you go again because that's what you do. What did you learn about yourself? A bit spiritual. But what did you learn about yourself during that particular week of picking yourself up and going again?
It was one of those things where I knew I couldn't do anything entertainment based. Wrestling was not going to happen. Stand-up was not going to happen. And so I got my physical therapy license back and I went back to the front line. I worked in two hospitals during the two biggest peaks of COVID. And you want to talk about surreal. It's just, you know, what you learn is you realize that you just got to keep moving. And eventually I think being patient is the hard part. I think a lot of times we don't want to be patient with ourselves. We don't want to give ourselves time to figure it out. So for me, I was working in hospitals. I remember there were those moments where I'm fully gowned up, like hazmat suit style, about to go into like my fifth COVID room of the day. And I remember thinking, I'm like, as I put the mask on, it's not easy to breathe. I'm like, oh my God, a number of months ago, just a couple of months ago, I was broadcasting on TV. Just a couple of months ago, I had a microphone in front of 13,000 people in Staples Center in the ring. And I'm like, now I'm seeing these people that are struggling to breathe. Like it just puts everything in perspective, you know, where, yeah, you could feel sorry for yourself, but at the same time, I'm grateful that I'm helping these people out. And I knew eventually we would get through it. And it was actually a weekend where I false tested positive for COVID and I couldn't do anything for a couple of days. It's when I just started emailing, cold emailing combat sports companies galore with, you know, resume, footage, background, the whole thing. And it slowly led to stuff because no one's going to feel sorry for you. Like none's going to be handed to you. I'm grateful for that opportunity. The world changed, you know, we have to change with it. So I guess the spiritual thing of it is that you're capable of anything and you truly don't know what is coming next. What you say yes to today could lead to another bigger yes tomorrow.
You alluded to it a little bit earlier. Has WWE reached out since?
I keep that to myself for the most part, but I mean, look, I look at it this way. I'm open to anything. Like I left on great terms. I'm very proud of my work. I was told that, you know, I surpassed all expectations. And for me, it's like right now I'm focused on so many things, whether it's voiceover, whether it's stand-up. And obviously I'm calling MMA, boxing, and pro wrestling. You know, I'm the play-by-play guy for the Ultimate Women of Wrestling, UWW, alongside Melina and Rampage Jackson. There's a team for you. Right? I'm actually going to be calling Spark Joshi this Wednesday, the 11th in Los Angeles, and also Saturday, the 14th in Orlando. They're kind of an upstart Joshi company that's really turning some heads, which
I'm fascinated by this. What a great startup this is turning into.
I'm very excited for it. And the owner has been a pleasure to deal with. So I'm very excited to be working with them. And like you said, I'm freelancing, man. Like I'm very proud to be working for Titan FC on UFC Fight Pass, you know, Undisputed Promotions on Fight TV with boxing, and basically anyone else that comes along. Like, could I be tossed on national television this week? Oh, I'm ready. But you just don't know what opportunities are going to be there. So for me, it's like I just keep forging ahead as a professional, knowing that there really isn't anybody out there with my skill set. On top of everything I've done, I'm calling every combat sport possible, master's degree in physical therapy. No commentator knows the body like me. And so it's a matter of just waiting for my time, staying sharp, working when I can, and you never know what opportunities are going to come up because I feel like I've been a great person to work with. I think I'm an easy professional to work with. And so looking forward to the future. And I'm grateful that we got to ham it up about wrestling for a little bit. We never said my third match, by the way.
I know. I was going to say the one thing that nobody else has that you have is there's the trifecta of matches that you have chosen for your desert island. So your third and final match, sir, what will it be?
Real quick, it all ties it in. WrestleMania 35. I'm not kidding when I say I had my contract. I got the contract that day that I flew to New York to go to WrestleMania weekend. And my seats for WrestleMania could not have been higher. If you recall, it was rainy, it was windy, it was freezing at the top of Giant Stadium. So to me, it was basically watching, you know, Bryan Danielson and Kofi Kingston, and of course, Ronda, Becky, and Charlotte in the main event. Both of them, just incredible moments for different reasons. But I remember sitting at the top of this stadium, freezing, knowing that I had a contract back at the hotel that I was literally sending overnighting the next day, saying to myself, I go, I'm up here freezing right now, but next year I might be somewhere down there. And that is a moment I'll never forget. And that's why I wanted to put those out there, you know, those two matches out there, because you're sitting there at the end of a long night and you're like, I love this. I'm here because I love this, but oh my God, I just got a job with that company down there. That was a crazy moment.
It's all about dream jobs, which is a big part of your brand new special, Saudi Stepdad, which is on YouTube now. I want to very quickly touch on this before we let you go. Does the pressure hit a bit different when it's not so much a 10 or 15 mil, 20 minute set, but a special? Does the pressure hit different?
Yeah, to a certain extent. Like when I shot the new special, I did two shows in one night, just like I did with the previous one. But the key is you want to nail it the first time, so the second show can just be fun and you can just be a little bit looser with it. Luckily, that's how it worked out. You know, I was really happy with the first show. Used some stuff from the second show. There are certain things like when I speak Arabic in the set, because, you know, my wife's from Saudi Arabia. In between shows, she kind of coached me. She's like, well, you kind of said this wrong. You kind of said this too fast. So on the second show, focus on the Arabic jokes more. And it ended up working perfectly thanks to her guidance, because, you know, to an Arabic speaking audience, they're going to understand it a lot more, you know, things like that. So yeah, there's always pressure because, you know, you got to deal with, are people coming? How many tickets are sold? You know, is the venue going to be set up correctly? You have a whole production team, but there's no feeling like it. You know, it's, I'm so proud of the special, just being able to tell my story and talk about, you know, my family now. And, you know, we truly are, as I say in the special, people call us a modern blended family. Which apparently means I'm white and they're not. That's what people mean.
That's basically what it means.
But it's the best, man. I'm really proud of the special, and I'm very grateful to anyone who wants to give it a watch. 43 minutes, and it's on YouTube for free.
And where can people go to keep up with, to watch that and keep up with everything that you're up to as well, Johnny?
Easy. YouTube.com/JohnnyLaQuasto or JQuasto on all socials, JQUASTO. And I don't really post too much on Twitter, mostly just promoting stuff, because as we know, Twitter is a bit of a hellscape. And I want to say congratulations to you. You know, you got the Impact Tour coming up, which is great. They're amazing to work with.
Stop it. They are. I'm so excited, because obviously you've been there. Any advice I can pick from your brain about it? Please, Johnny.
I think,
help,
like I told
Johnny,
you,
help. No, help.
Here's the thing. You have the luxury of knowing way ahead of time. I found out I was doing Multiverse 24 hours ahead. So
that's loads of time. it's not loads of time.
I mean, I thought I had most of the card. And then I'm a big fan of, like, when it comes to wrestling ring announcing, I don't want to use any no cards. I want to have it in my brain. So like a matter of just getting it all written out, trying to make sure I get everything correct. Even before the show, I'm making sure that the information is correct. So since you have the time, it's just, I would say go back and watch the broadcast so you can hear the announcements for a lot of their stars that are going to be on the tour. That way, boom, you already got it written down. You have time to practice. And also just really take your time. It's easy to our brains move faster than they should. It's really easy to rush, but don't take your time with the announcements. Just speak from down here, not in the throat. You want to go diaphragm.
The diaphragm.
Yeah, you want to work from down here, because that way at the end of the night, your throat's not going to be hurting. And also your voice will be deeper if you talk from down here as opposed to up here.
Because that's the terrifying bit, because normally I'll do North Wrestling in Newcastle, but there's one show every 6 weeks. So the next day I can just, you know, drink a lot of hot lemon and I'll be fine by Monday. But mm-hmm. 3 on the bounce, that's the new challenge. That's the new challenge.
You're going to crush it. It's going to be amazing. Oh. I loved the video with Hendry telling you about it. It was incredible. But no, of course, hot tea every day, hot tea every night with lemon and honey, do that whole thing. But just really, really take your time and just trust your voice. Don't feel like you have to go overboard. Your voice is already going to be strong enough to carry it.
God love you. Hey, enough about me, the trusted voice of Johnny LaQuasto, joining us on Cultaholic Island. Follow every step he makes and go and check out, for the love of God, Saudi Stepdad. It's a lovely 3/4 of an hour that you'll be glad you spent with Johnny.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us on Cultaholic Island. Please, let's find an excuse to do this again.
I would love to. It was an honor. So much fun talking about the thing we love. And hey, if you're a promotion, let's work together. I'm open. Let's go.
Get Johnny on your books, you cowards.
As my
book
wife would say,
you cowards!
You cowards! As my wife would say, you buggered us! You buggered us! Book him!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.